Welcome to A Fork in Time, the alternate history podcast.
Welcome back to A Fork in Time. This is Don sitting in the host chair again. Today we're going to be trying something new here on the podcast, and we'll be doing that a lot lately as we continue to look for different ways to bring variety to what we do and to the format. Many of you have enjoyed the episodes where Brent Frost has joined us with his insights into alternate forks in time, and in particular bringing unique and detailed alternate timelines. I mentioned before and I'll mention again, I think Brent ultimately has a future as a writer of alternative historical fiction because the detail that he's able to apply to the timelines as he thinks them through, often well down the road and often in a lot of detail. Detail that we recognize in people that we recognize in different roles. So Brent has prepared an outline for a different result of what might have happened following the 1844 U.S. presidential election. And so what you're about to hear now is a recording that Brent provided me of that timeline. It runs for about 10 minutes and goes in some detail for a period of time moving forward. So what we're going to do on today's episode, I'm going to provide that timeline to you, get it out there in our community and in our space, specifically for folks to reply back. So we'll set up a special link on the show notes here, or if you go to to the webpage at www.aforkintimepodcast.com, you will find an easy link there to provide feedback to this specific timeline. And what I'd like to do is encourage two things from our listeners. Provide feedback on whether you think Brent has the right idea or the wrong idea about how things would have flowed forward with as much detail as you want to provide there. And if you'd like to participate maybe on a future episode where we bring Brent on to discuss this timeline in more detail, that gives you a chance to review it and then be part of that show. So the idea here is with today's episode is to get the timeline out for you to consider and to be thinking about, with the whole idea of actually producing feedback on that timeline, either back through the website and most likely with a future episode. So without any further ado, here's Brent talking about what might have happened if Henry Clay had won the 1844 U.S. presidential election. Hope you enjoy.
The 1844 U.S. presidential election was among the most consequential in American history. Had history gone slightly different and that election winner been Henry Clay instead of James K. Polk, you may well have had many people who are listening to this broadcast right now listening to it in another country. That's the subject of our scenario today. Our point of divergence begins in 1844, where the Democratic candidate James K. Polk, an advocate for expansion and the annexation of Texas, will lose the election to the Whig candidate Henry Clay, who is an advocate for Pan-American cooperation, but not the kind of rabid expansionism that the Democrats and Polk are advocating. As President, Clay will work to strengthen the relationship with Texas, but when an annexation proves unsuccessful, he will be content to form a strong alliance with that nation. In 1848, Clay will retire as president, having been successful in accomplishing a settlement with the British over the Oregon Territory, and having attempted, although unsuccessfully, to annex California through a purchase from Mexico. In 1849, Lewis Cass will become president and support Texas in the Mexican-American War, where the United States will, rather than annexing Texas directly, support them and fight alongside them in that war, gaining as their share of the spoils when victory is won in 1852, the northern half of the province of California, with the southern half going to Texas. Texas now will have a republic which stretches from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific coast, including all of the territories that we know today as the state of Arizona, New Mexico, the state of Texas, and the southern half of the state of California, plus Clark County, Nevada. All of this will become the modern boundaries of the Republic of Texas, with the borders remaining intact until the present day. The Republic of Texas remains neutral during the American Civil War, although its sympathies lie with the South. After the war, many Southerners leave the South and move to Texas. in search of a republic that was more suited to their worldview and economic practices. As a result, many Deep South states become strongly Republican, including South Carolina, Mississippi, and Louisiana, with Georgia, Alabama, and Florida becoming swing states. Republican Rutherford B. Hayes will win the 1876 presidential election without the need for a special compromise or electoral commission, and as a result, Reconstruction will remain in place through the 1880s. Texas will support the United States in the war against Spain in 1898, going so far as to send volunteer regiments to support the United States in the invasion of Puerto Rico and Cuba. By 1916, Texas is a very rich and very strong republic, closely allied with the United States, though still relatively small in population, having just over 12 million inhabitants. It will also have abolished slavery around the year 1890. Without the states of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, as well as the southern half of California, Woodrow Wilson would have lost the 1916 presidential election to Republican Charles Evans Hughes. And with Hughes as president, there would have been a very different American entry into the First World War. There would have been no Wilsonian Democratic Crusade rhetoric, no 14 points, and therefore no reason for the German government to expect lenient terms if it sued for an armistice. The war would likely have continued on until German forces had been forced back into German territory itself. That would have made it far more difficult to argue, as Ludendorff and many other German generals were to do, that the German army was never defeated in the field and it was only because they were betrayed on the home front by socialists and by left-wing Jews and other elements that had been conspiring against them. This will have a large impact on German politics going forward in the 1920s and 30s. Texas, meanwhile, will remain neutral in the First World War, while making a fortune selling oil and war equipment to the United States. Texans will not entirely stay out of the war, however, since Texans are well known for loving a good fight, and many thousands will join the United States Army, forming Texas Brigades, which will serve gallantly and with distinction throughout the war in France. The recession of 1920 to 1921 causes the Hughes administration to be discredited after the war and lose re-election to the dark horse Democratic candidate John W. Davis. The 1920s proceed very much the same under a conservative Democrat president, which Davis would have been. And by 1928, the Democratic frontrunners are Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, Secretary of War Franklin Roosevelt, New York Governor Al Smith, and Missouri Senator James Reed. The Democratic frontrunners are New York Congressman Theodore Roosevelt Jr. and Massachusetts Senator Calvin Coolidge, among others. After both sides have grueling conventions, the Democratic candidate will be Herbert Hoover, with Franklin Roosevelt as his running mate, while the Republicans will nominate Calvin Coolidge as their candidate, with Charles Curtis as his running mate, after Roosevelt declined to be nominated for vice president and instead returns home to run for governor of New York. In the end, the Democrats win the presidential election narrowly. However, the Republicans have their share of victories, including the victory of Ted Roosevelt in the New York governor's race, where he narrowly defeats the Democratic candidate. By 1932, a thoroughly discredited Hoover administration will be swept from office by the Republican ticket led by New York Governor Theodore Roosevelt, Jr. The 1930s will see a recovery of the U.S. economy under the Roosevelt administration and the New Deal, which a combination of conservative Republican businessmen and progressive Republican legislators put together under the Roosevelt leadership. By 1940, Ted Roosevelt is ready to retire. However, the effects of the war in Europe cause him to decide to run for a third term. He will go on to win the presidency over Democratic candidate Wendell Willkie. Roosevelt dies in 1943 and is succeeded by his three-term vice president, Arthur Landenberg, former senator from Michigan. Vandenberg will go on to win the 1944 presidential election with New York Governor Thomas Dewey as his running mate. Vandenberg will decline to seek another term in 1948, and Dewey will become the Republican nominee after defeating Senator Robert Taft and General Douglas MacArthur for the Republican nomination. Dewey will go on to narrowly lose the presidency to the Democratic candidate, Senator Albin Barkley of Kentucky. Barclay will decline to seek a second term in 1952, and Governor Adlai Stevenson will be nominated to succeed him as the Democratic candidate, while the Republicans will nominate Senator Robert Taft after a narrow victory over General Dwight Eisenhower. Taft will run with General Douglas MacArthur as his running mate and will narrowly defeat Stevenson in the November election. Taft will die before the end of 1953 due to cancer and will be succeeded by Vice President Douglas MacArthur, who will serve out his term but will not seek another one due to his age. He will also throw his support to his Vice President, Howard Buffett, who had served as Commerce Secretary under the Taft administration. Buffett will go on to win the nomination over several rivals and will choose Richard Nixon as his Vice President. Buffett will narrowly defeat the Democratic ticket of Adlai Stevenson and Estes Gufofer and will serve one term but will decline to seek another in 1960. And Richard Nixon will become the Republican candidate for president, running against John Kennedy, the Democratic candidate. Let's pause there for a moment and look at the Republic of Texas since World War I. The Republic has continued to grow and thrive, particularly in its Pacific provinces, with California becoming a major player in Texas politics. In 1941, when the United States declares war on Japan after being attacked at Pearl Harbor, Texas will join the United States in that war, declaring war on Japan as per its mutual defense treaty with the United States. It will also join the war in Europe after Germany declares war on the United States in December of 1941. And Texas will contribute men and materiel to both theaters, with its most distinguished military commander being General Chester Nimitz, who will serve as commander of the Texas Expeditionary Force to Europe. After the war, Nimitz will become president of the Republic of Texas. I'll point out here that originally the presidents of Texas were serving a 2-year term, but in the 1800s that would be changed to a 4-year term with a possibility of seeking re-election. This is similar to the United States model. Texas would be ahead of its time in that it would adopt term limits before the United States did for its presidents. After Nimitz's time in office, he will be succeeded by his vice president, who will serve a term before being defeated by Texas Senator Lyndon Johnson. It's important to note that when I say Texas Senator, I speak of the Federal Senate of the Republic of Texas. Since in the 1880s, there had been a significant change in the Republic, with not only slavery being abolished, but the states being created, 10 of which would comprise the Republic of Texas on the federal model similar to the United States, whereby each state would have a certain number of senators representing it, the difference being with the United States that these senators would be elected directly by the people, as would the members of the Texas House of Representatives. Each state would have its own governor, its own House and Senate, similar to the United States. Lyndon Johnson would have been elected to the Texas Senate from his state and would continue to serve until being elected president in 1958 and re-elected in 1962 in a narrow victory over Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater. In 1961 and 1962, the Republic of Texas would be stronger advocates for a military intervention in Cuba to prevent the spread of communism. After the United States failed to take strong action, the Republic of Texas would see a cooling of relations between the Johnson administration and the Kennedy administration. In 1963, in a goodwill tour to Texas, President Kennedy will be assassinated by a communist sympathizer with Cuban connections. This will result in the Republic of Texas taking an even stronger line against communism and urging an invasion of Cuba in retaliation. When the United States refuses to do this, the Republic of Texas refuses to support it in its war in Vietnam, meanwhile taking a much stronger line against communism and seeking alliances with nations like Israel and South Africa, who are seen as being more strongly anti-communist. This will also see the United States and Texas take different positions on issues in Latin America, where the Texas Republic will support right-wing anti-communist governments in Nicaragua, Chile, and Brazil, and the United States will take a more cool line to those nations going forward. In 1966, Barry Goldwater will be elected president of the Republic of Texas, after having narrowly lost the election 4 years earlier to Lyndon Johnson, and he will be succeeded in turn by former Johnson protege John B. Connally, who will serve for 8 years from 1975 until 1983. In 1983, former actor and governor Ronald Reagan will be elected to serve as president and will serve for the next 8 years. In 1990, Texas will elect its first ever woman president when Ann Richards is elected to serve. She will serve for 2 terms from 1991 to 1999 and will be succeeded by Governor Rick Perry, who will go on to serve for the next 8 years from 1999 to 2007, when he will be succeeded by Texas's second female president, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who will serve also for 8 years before being succeeded in 2015 by Greg Abbott, who is currently, of course, the president of Texas.
So there you go. There's Brandt's timeline, 1844 essentially to present, for a different outcome. We begin with Henry Clay becoming president of the United States in 1844. So as we suggested, what we'd like you to do is give us feedback on that timeline for a future episode where we probably discuss it, but also just through the website. So again, in the show notes, you'll find a link that will carry you to www.aforkintimepodcast.com, and particularly for the feedback on what we're calling the Clay timeline. So we'd love to hear your thoughts and your comments on what you think Brent got right, what you think Brent got wrong, what you liked and didn't like about the timeline, and we'll engage with this again on a future episode. Once again, we thank you for joining us today and look forward to visiting with you next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to A Fork in Time, the alternate history podcast. Learn more about the podcast at www.aforkintimepodcast.com. Join us next time.